Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of White Wine Question Time, Something from the Cellar, our midweek mini drop that allows us to revisit some of our finest and most vintage conversations. And this week, well, we're giving a leg up and a high five to all of those marathon runners across the country. Last weekend, it was the Manchester Marathon. This weekend, it's the London Marathon. So if you need some last minute motivation, some words of wisdom from those that have gone above and beyond as you approach one of the biggest challenges you'll ever take on physically, then you've got three fantastic guests just for you. First up, cricket legend Phil Tufnell, who's inspired many with his sporting achievements, not to mention the hours he's put in at the bar, but that's another story. Here, he tells us about his own biggest inspirations, the people that have helped him through some of his most challenging times. I wanted to talk about your dad, because he stands out as somebody that's been the making and saving of you in so many ways. The making of you because of his encouragement, his sacrifice and his commitment to help you make it in cricket. And the saving of you because, well, when your mum died, you say yourself, you went off the rails, you left the sport, got a motorbike, was expelled from school. You say everything became a bit pointless. And thankfully, my dad dragged me out of it and tried to point me down the right path. All of a sudden, it was just me, my dad and my brother, three fellas, wandering about, not knowing what to do. You have to sit down and get yourself together and sort of move on a bit. And I became very close to my dad then. He ran the family. So I wondered, Phil, if you could tell me a little bit more about your dad and that time, because it sounds like a very key time in your life. And also about the people that set you on the right path and maybe pulled you back from making some wrong turns along the way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a tricky old time. You know, as you say, my mum was a fantastic woman and, you know, really sort of led us all, you know, she was the driving force, really, you know. And when, you know, it all became very dark and very cold in the house when she passed away, I'm afraid, you know. And my father, you know, had to keep everything going, really. And it was funny, actually, because he sort of then said, listen, you know what I mean, you know, I can't force you, I'm going to take you every, you know. He took me as a boy, as he said, stood on the touch lines, freezing bloody cold in football, you know what I mean? So lucky, you know, to have that sort of support and what have you. But then, you know, when I went off the rails a little bit, he said, you know, listen, you know, I can only point you in the right direction, you know, in what I think is the right direction. But, you know, if you want to go in a different direction, you know, I can't bloody stop you, boy. You know what I mean? So, but then thankfully, I then went to work with him at a silversmith's factory. hammering pots and pans, and I was a good silversmith because that's what his trade was, and I became this good sort of silversmith, and I was, earning my first wage packet and everything, and sort of going down the pub at lunchtime with all the smiths and all the polishers and everything like that and what have you. But then my dad said, he said, one day, I walked past you at the bench, and I was smashing these pots and pans, getting all the dents out of them and everything. And he said, son, he said, your eyes have gone dark. He said to me, I'm going to give you a full day's pay, and I've organised a trial down at Lord's. And it's only 2 hours. You've got to get there at 10, and it's finished by 12. And even I could do the maths on that one. I went, hold on, a full day's pay. And all I've got to go down.
I love that that's your first thought, Phil.
Yes, a full day's pay. And all I've got to do is run about and have a little game of cricket. Well, I think I'll do that. So he then took me. He dropped me off. And I sort of did this trial. And I got in, thankfully. And then it sort of then started from there. So if my dad had sort of given up on me and I was doing all right in the business and what have you, but thankfully he still then, that was his last throw of the dice sort of thing to try and get me to this line and playing the sort of, following the sun. And he said, you don't want to be hammering pots and pans all day, boy, you know what I mean? For 50 years, he said, I've done that all my life, you know what I mean? He said, and it was great and it was a good living and what have you, but he said, just give it one more go. And that was the last throw of the dice, and thankfully it worked. So I will be forever in his debt.
So he really, that's what I got from that, is that he was the kind of the saving of you, the making of you. Yeah. He pulled you off the wrong path and put you on the right one.
Right.
And, we're so lucky that we have people that come into our lives and can do that. Has anybody else been as influential, do you think, in terms of helping you to turn the right way rather than the wrong way?
Yeah, Dawny for sure. What I mean? Yeah, I mean, God knows what I'd have been up to if I hadn't met Dawn. So, they're two very, very special people in my life. Obviously, my mum, she passed away. So my dad and Dawn. The D's, all the D's.
Double D.
Double D. Double D. Double dishwasher. Double D. That's what we've got. Double D. You've got to get.
That's what you are at the moment, Phil.
You've got to have two dishwashers. Thank God I've got two dishwashers.
What was it about Dawn that made you stop and become the man that you are, as opposed to the man you were on track to become? Because you did. She changed you profoundly, didn't she?
Loyalty and honesty. There you go. Loyalty and honesty. And good fun. Great fun. And very attractive. I would probably say loyalty and honesty, without a shadow of a doubt. If Dawn says she's going to do something, she does it, and does it with enthusiasm, and goes for everything with the determination, even if it's, painting a wall or something, Make sure she does it to the best she can do. Yeah, she's, when sometimes perhaps I could be a little bit slapdash and always looking perhaps for sort of a shortcut or something,
And a way out.
Yeah. But Dawn, if she puts her mind to something and she says she's going to do it, she does it. And I respect that. Immensely, and as you say, loyalty and honesty is right up there for me, and she's got that in spades.
You speak with such affection about Dawn, and you got, how long have you, how many years you've been married now, or is that a bad question to ask a man two glasses of wine in?
It must be 15 or 16 years.
Shall I Google it, Phil?
Yes, it must be 15. I'm terrible.
18 years.
There you go. Loved every minute of it. Love her every morning. Love her more each day.
Do you?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think she gets more beautiful each day. I really, really do. I'm a very lucky lad.
I hope she can hear you from upstairs where she's laying out, waiting to ring her bell to get a cup of tea upstairs.
Hopefully. Hopefully. No, I'm very knuckle
There's a few in the bank after this chat, Phil. You've done really well. Before we move on to my next and final question, I just wanted to pick up on Mike Gatting and some of the senior players that I think you mentioned John before, at Middlesex, who you said saw the potential in you. I think you recalled before turning up in the Middlesex dressing room for the first time wearing earrings, you had long hair, you're wearing Winkle pickers, you had a mad jacket on, and everybody just looked up at you like, what the hell has just walked in? And they saw beyond that, didn't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a very sort of old school tie a little bit back in the day, you know, turning up to Lords to play for Middlesex. I had a ponytail and earrings and everything, and everyone went, they bloody let me in. They wouldn't let me in. And I'd say,
shut up, really?
Actually, you know, you've signed me. You should have come in. I've got to come in because I'm
calling. They wouldn't let you in.
You know, get out without a tie and a blazer on. And, you know, and I perhaps had a sort of a rebellious streak a little bit, perhaps even sort of like an anti-establishment sort of streak a little bit, perhaps back in the day, you know, and sort of, didn't you can't tell me what to bloody do and all this kind of stuff and that. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily get you anywhere, you know. And I can remember Gat said to me one day, because I had this great big ponytail back in the day. I mean, it looked ridiculous, you know what I mean? And I was scruffy and I had an earring and everything like that. And Gat said to me, he said, England are looking at you. He said, but they ain't going to bloody pick you if you've got this stupid earring and you keep, you know, messing about and, you know, you're not sort of toeing the line a little bit, you know what I mean? And you have to get your bloody hair cut. And he took me down to the barbers, sort of like a screaming child, you know what I mean? Under his arm, sort of stiff. And he took me down to this hairdresser's, plonked me in the barber's chair, and he sort of said, right, give this bloke a short back in the sides, you know what I mean? And I was going, oh, this is outrageous. You can't tell me what to do. If, you know, it's not about just having a haircut, you know, you should be picked on merit and everything like that. He said, listen, just listen to me. And I went, oh, all right then, like that. And then two weeks later, I was selected for England. So he kind of knew what he was talking
about. He's right.
Yeah, so he kind of knew what he's talking about. And then those kind of things slowly, I suppose, they sort of mature you a little bit, don't they? You know, and you can't just keep running about, messing around and, you know, rubbing people up the wrong way and having a surly face or something. You know what I mean? You have to sort of then, I suppose it's all part of growing up a little bit, isn't it? You know?
It is. It is exactly that. It's, you know, especially when you get a call up like that to the England team.
Yeah.
You got to man up in that moment and grow up, haven't you? You know, you've got to stop.
Yeah,
piss arsing about like a boy and start acting like a man.
Exactly. And perhaps, you know, that's exactly what they sort of then taught me a little bit, because I was, you say, running about, you know, it's sort of like late teens and in my early 20s, like a, you know, just like a little boy, really, you know what I mean? And if you want to start playing with the big boys, you know what I mean, you have to start acting like them.
Next up, it's Olympian Dame Denise Lewis, an Olympic gold medal winner, a Commonwealth and European champion, who recalls how tough love at the hands of her coach truly pushed her on to win gold, as well as tapping into her experiences of being loved without condition by a mother that taught her never, ever to give up. When you won the silver at the World Championships, your coach at the time, Charles Van Comeny, said to you, you didn't win silver, you lost gold. As I heard you recount that, bearing in mind that the previous events you'd won a bronze, so this was a step up, I'm still stuck in a moment of going, is that amazing advice or is that totally the wrong thing to say? You tell me.
Well, a bit like you, I sort of pondered over that. I'm like, what is this guy on? I mean, come on, celebrate with the rest of the nation, why don't you? It did kind of make me think as well that actually, if I am to go on and hopefully become Olympic champion, I am going to start to have to really look at how I address success and what success looks like for me, and how do I value my talents and my attitude to my training. Because I think in order to get the best out of yourself, you have to start re-examining the things that you do daily. And we can also compare that to how you get through lockdown, anything that you want to achieve or setbacks, how do you pull yourself out of that? And that's the mindset thing. And that starts with what you do on a daily basis. How do you get up in the morning and view what you want to achieve for that day? Now, for me, in that lead up to Sydney and the Olympics, it was, how do I extract the very best out of myself in my training? What I do off track as well, and do I keep getting into that mindset, making my training better? And it was just things like that, that comment, that phrase altered for me. It was just like, yeah, you didn't win, you were capable of winning, and you didn't. So let's go back to the drawing board and turn you into a winner. I went on to win two medals the next year, two gold medals. So yeah, maybe I did learn something after all.
Maybe it wasn't such a crass, awful, awkward thing to say. Yeah. What was your face? What did you? How did you manage your response to that? Because in that moment, it's like putting a massive pin in your balloon and bursting it, surely.
No, not for me. I looked at him almost aghast, but I did laugh, because only he could say something like that and get away with it. He's Dutch. They're very direct,
you know.
We're not used to, very matter of fact. We're not used to that sort of level of bluntness in Britain, I don't think. And, you know, we do come across individuals like that. And for me, that is like, okay, I'm not taking that personally, because I understand that you're trying to extract something from me and you want a reaction, but you want to see and test me whether I'm up for the challenge, whether I can actually use that as fuel to inspire myself to be better.
So when I put myself in his mindset, because I really, as you can tell, I've overthought this. I mean, seriously, I've done a lot of thinking about it, Denise. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at him and I'm going, okay, yeah, actually, if we go back to 1989, so almost a decade previous, you sustained a terrible knee injury and carried on competing by learning to high jump on the opposite leg, which is like asking Andy Murray to go and play left-handed at Wimbledon, right? Which, that's what you did. So actually, when I look at what you did there, if I was your coach, I probably would have been all right with saying, no, you lost the gold, you didn't win the silver, because he knows what you're capable of. You are incredible in terms of your determination to overcome whatever adversity looks like. How did you do that?
I don't know, Kate, if I'm really honest. I mean, I've had years to look back and think about where this sort of determination and where I'm sitting in my little office. I can see a picture of my mom, actually. There's a picture, my wedding picture of me, my mom. My mom walked me down the aisle. And
I love,
you know,
that.
She walked me down the aisle and it was a beautiful moment. And you alluded to it in the beginning. I've been raised by a single mom. I just used to watch her work herself to a frazzle. She worked two jobs, literally. First thing in the morning, she'll go off, do one job, come back in the evening, wash, change, and then do a night shift sometimes, you know. So really hard. And part of me was like, do I actually really want to ever work that hard? You know, life has got to be easier than that. But actually, life isn't easier than that. If you want something, you've got to work for it. And so I think, you know, seeing that daily, that level of resilience and determination just to get through with no Olympic aspiration, but it was a life aspiration to be better, to have enough money. You know, yes, we used to have what they probably call family credit because we earned the right to have it. But my mom was very determined that she wanted to be independent. And so she worked. And so that was just in my DNA, I think. And so that was why when these setbacks arrive in athletics or you're at a crossroads in life, I do draw on that strength and think, after sunshine, there is rain, but after the rain comes sunshine. And so you've got to accept these ebbs and flows of life.
Yeah.
And there are going to be many.
You're so right, because that's reality, right? You can't have the peaks without the troughs.
Amen.
And when I look at your mom's story, she was incredibly young when she had you and thrown out of the house, actually. She was kind of, you know, cast aside by her family, who were really quite embarrassed at where she'd got to. And I know that that healed in time, but I can't imagine that experience ever fully left her. That sense of abandonment and being so alone.
You're absolutely right. And she is fiercely independent. I mean, she even now, she won't take as much help as I'd love to give her, and I'm begging her to take the help in certain things. But yeah, that time must have been incredibly difficult, you know, coming from Jamaica. She was born and raised in Jamaica in her formative years, to come to a completely different country. She recounts also stories of seeing snow for the first time when she was a teenager, how sort of wowed she was by that emotion. But then also to have that level of, rejection. I think rejection is the right word. It was disappointing. It was fueled by disappointment. You know, my grandmother was God-fearing. Bless her, she was God-fearing. And her new husband at that time, they were just disappointed. My mom felt very much, that she'd let everyone down. But she, again, determined, despite being really young, to have her baby and to raise her. And she did. She did a great job under challenging times. You know, imagine a single parent in the 70s, black woman.
Exactly. This is what we forget, the time, the context of the time. There was probably no greater social shame.
Completely.
And the fact that she was a woman of colour would have only added to that, because, you know, I know we have relatives in our family that, you know, were sent off to have babies and didn't come back with them. You know, you there's that. So this the shame around women who were not married.
It was huge. Yeah.
Her strength of spirit is what you are drilling into, I suppose, then. That was completely tangible for you.
Completely. And I absorbed it, whether it intentionally or subconsciously. And I constantly utilize that throughout my life in all its guises.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Last but not least, the trailblazing Judy Murray talks to us about the impact Billie Jean King had on her and how she was inspired by her to keep her own ladders down for the next generation of young women coming up in sport.
when I was young and an aspiring young Scottish tennis player, you know, there wasn't tennis on the TV apart from Wimbledon. So you got 2 weeks of black and white TV. And, you know, I love Billie Jean King, Chris Evert, Martina Navratilova, Steffi Graf, a little beyond them. But when I was very small, it was the black and white, and it was Billie Jean King was the one that I enjoyed watching. Now I still have to pinch myself a lot that she is a friend of mine, that we've worked together with her Philadelphia Freedoms team last summer in World Team Tennis. I've done a number of panel things and Q&A things with her. And I still think back to sitting on the sofa watching her black and white with her specs with my mum and just being, oh, she's amazing. You know, anyway, it's just, I would never imagine.
I mean, at that stage, you were playing, I mean, you were playing then. You won 64 titles in Scotland as a youth and senior player. But at that point when Billy was kind of top of her game in black and white TV, where would you have been in terms of your own tennis and progression?
Yeah, I was probably in my early teens, and tennis was very much a minority sport in Scotland because back then we had no indoor courts. So you played tennis in the summer and you played something else in the winter. I played badminton in the winter, but nobody ever aspired to be a great tennis player. And therefore nobody really aspired to be a great coach because you just couldn't do it all year round. It was just a summer month sport. So although I watched her on the TV, I might have had a dream, but it would have been a pipe dream, because that's all you would see was just Wimbledon. You wouldn't see, I mean, nowadays you get wall-to-wall tennis,
yeah,
and other sports on the TV. And tennis has been so fortunate because of what Billie Jean King and the cohort, the original nine they were called, they were nine tennis players from 50 years ago who broke away from the tennis tour because they were sick of the men getting 90% of the prize money and the women getting 10% and having no say in anything.
I mean, to the point that Billie Jean King, I mean, she stood her ground and she refused to take the title. And without her putting her racket down, so to speak, women wouldn't be where they are right now.
Yeah, they were so incredibly brave, pioneering back then, because you know they were out, the nine of them, the nine women players, they promoted their own tour, they sold the tickets out in the streets themselves. I mean, it was incredible what they did to start it off, but they absolutely stood their ground to say, we're not having this, you know, it's a man's world and we are good enough, and they were, to be watchable. And it is one of the many reasons how I still admire so much Billie Jean, because she doesn't just stand up for equality, gender equality in tennis. She stands up for equality and fairness in everything now. And she's 77 and she's still using her voice and she's still making her presence felt and she still makes a difference. And yeah, she's absolutely remarkable in that. But you're right. What she and the other women did way back then, 50 years ago, they had a celebration this year to celebrate those 50 years. It created what became the Women's Tour, the Women's Tennis Association. Mm. And tennis is pretty much a 50-50 sport at the top level in terms of prize money, endorsements, opportunities, sponsors, and visibility. So it's that if you can see it, you can be it, because tennis is all the time. Bums are on seats, sponsors are there. It's way ahead of most of the other sports for women because of what she did.
I don't think female football, for example, could be where it was if somebody like Billie hadn't used her platform. And when we talk about platforms now, we forget that, I mean, she really did have a platform. Back in 1973, 90 million people tuned in around the world to watch Billie Jean King literally wipe the floor with former Wimbledon champion, who was something of a chauvinist, Bobby Riggs. And she literally played him off the court, and it was dubbed the Battle of the Sexes, which... I mean, that match, that must have meant so much to you and other women in sport, in terms of showing them that women mean business or can mean business.
Yeah, I think Bobby Riggs, he was quite a loudmouth, show off type of a guy, so he's the perfect person for her to take down. But you know, he took a massive risk because she may not have won, and then it would have been an absolute disaster. But yeah, she's done so much to showcase the women's side of her sport and the importance of giving women an equal opportunity to do whatever they want within sport, because it's not just about the top end. It's actually about opportunities to participate, opportunities to compete, opportunities to administer or lead or officiate, which is what I was talking about earlier in terms of the female workforce. We need a much bigger female workforce. And she has used her voice incredibly successfully. And so, yeah, she's definitely is the person I still look to as the inspiration for somebody's got to do it. You know, if we don't make a noise, nobody hears you. As she tells me that all the time. And if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair.
I love that. That's great.
I hit 60 last year, and it was one of those moments where I thought, I'm getting into what Jane Fonda calls the third act. And and I thought, you know, I've been working in tennis all of my adult life, and I've worked really hard because I love what I do, and I've never lost my passion for it, which is a great thing. But you definitely do get to a stage where you think, right, I need to pass the baton a little bit here to create more time for myself. So I think that that's what I don't think I'm going to be very good at it because I like yeah, I'm so used to always being busy, but I think that I do think that's something that I want to do. I want to be able to spend more time with my family and my grandchildren in particular. But I think that for me, the women in sport thing is the thing that I will continue to use my voice and to try to help or persuade or bring a group of younger than me women up to be the next generation of spokespeople for women's sport. Yeah. I think it's really incredibly important that we pass our experiences on. And as we spoke about before, it is so important to know that there's somebody on the end of the phone or the end of an email that you can, if you need a bit of support, or you're a bit unsure about something, that you can just go, can you help me with this? And that you're there just to listen and lend support. I'd quite like to continue doing that further down the line as a
kind of like an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me for another trip down to the cellar. If you'd like to hear any of these episodes in full, just search for the episodes by the guest's name in our back catalogue. There's over 300 episodes in there. Oh, before I go, one more thing. Remember, you can always find us on Instagram for all the latest about the show. We're at @whitewine_questiontime. And also, please hit the follow button on Spotify. It's really, really helpful in terms of us being able to find you. Today, you've been treated to the delights of Phil Tufnell. There was Dame Denise Lewis and, of course, Judy Murray. I'll be back on your feeds on Friday with another brand new guest. Until then, thanks so much for listening.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.